The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it to a Friday. Just a couple more hours and the week is effectively over. And then we head into the weekend. One of the things I always look forward to on Fridays is an email I get from Vice News. What they do on Fridays is they, each Friday, they put together This Week in Trump's America in one sentence. So I thought I'd share this week's with you because it got here early. Usually it doesn't show up until after the program. But here's week 46 of Trump's America in one sentence. Donald Trump rejected reports that he was going to fire Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, said he had to fire Mike Flynn because he lied to Mike Pence and the FBI, then pondered why Flynn was in trouble and not Hillary Clinton, praised the Senate's passing of a tax bill that will add over $1 trillion to the deficit and primarily benefit the rich, full-on endorsed accused child molester Roy Moore for Senate, got a temporary green light for his travel ban from the Supreme Court, announced he'd revoke monument status for two huge nature reserves, opening them up to oil and gas companies, recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, upending 70 years of American policy and sparking violent protests, finally criticized Saudi Arabia for its brutal treatment of Yemen. I missed that one. And had his press secretary brush off Al Franken's parting jab about Trump's grab him by the pussy comments, and met with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to try to avert a government shutdown. And that, you know, I guess that's this week in a nutshell, although it seems a bit shorter than the week actually was. But I'll tell you, with each passing week, it's more and more. And it is just really difficult to, you know, to keep up with it all. And again, what Vice puts in this week in Trump's America in one sentence are only things that he specifically did, not necessarily things that those on his staff did. You know, we had Nixon, we had Trump's lawyer talking about how Nixon, I keep going to Nixon because I've got this Nixon clip here. And there are so many parallels, aren't there? Trump's lawyer saying that Trump cannot be guilty of obstruction of justice because he's the president. And as president, he's the country's chief law enforcement officer, which evokes this statement from Nixon.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Yeah. And that seems to be the playbook that Trump is following. I don't know. I'm still stuck in yesterday mode. Yesterday, when Al Franken resigned from the, said he'll be resigning within a couple of weeks, the end of the Senate, from the Senate. I'm guessing he's going to serve out the rest of the year, and he'll make, the end of December, the end of his term in the U.S. Senate. And just to continue where we left off yesterday, I can't help but feel that he was railroaded. Did he do things that were inappropriate? Yeah, possibly. But I got to tell you, the last allegation is the one that gets my gourd. And this last allegation is one that's not even being fully recognized by everyone. Depending on what news source you're listening to, they talk about the seventh allegation where a woman alleged that that Al Franken tried to kiss her and she chose to remain anonymous. Again, I've got this is such a weird, strange tightrope to walk because I think women have a right to confront their accusers, and I don't think they should have to out themselves when they come forth with a, you know, an allegation that somebody abused them or harassed them. But in a case like this, when we're talking about somebody's career being destroyed, I think we need more than, more than that anyway. So in some circles, we're hearing it was, you know, all the Democratic women in the Senate had been talking amongst themselves, as I'm sure they do. You know, it's a very small group. It's a very small, I hate the word elite, but it is. It's an elite club. And the Democratic women in the U.S. Senate, I'm sure, are a pretty tight-knit group because, they have shared experiences that nobody else has. So the word is that they had been talking amongst themselves and they were getting more and more worked up about the allegations against Al Franken. And it finally got to the point where somebody said, you know, one more allegation and that's it. We've got to call for his resignation. And that's what happened. And that was the seventh allegation, again, from a woman who chose not to use her name, but she did speak with, I think it was Politico. Politico knows who she is, and they are keeping her anonymity for her. So it's not like, well, I guess it is still an anonymous source. Out of the eight women who've come forward, I believe four of them chose to remain anonymous. Again, we're talking about, changing a man's life here. And the worst allegations came from Leanne Tweeden, who said that he pushed his tongue down her throat. Now, first of all, I've kissed quite a few men in my life, 58 years old. I've been around a little bit. Never once has a tongue gone down my throat. That would take an awfully long tongue. We have to be aware of the words that are used. And if we're talking about absolutes here, that would be the wrong words to use. So she could say, you know, he stuck his tongue in my mouth. That would be one thing. But down my throat, I know I'm nitpicking here, but I'm still raw from what happened yesterday. I really don't think Al Franken should have gone as long as Donald Trump is still in the White House, as long as Roy Moore is still running for a Senate seat that'll be voted on this Tuesday. But out of all the allegations that I read, and some of them he grabbed my butt, which there's no excuse for. He shouldn't be doing that. No man should touch a woman, especially in a sensitive body part where she doesn't want to be touched. But now I want to talk about the eighth accuser who came forward, because she is a personality who is known to progressive audiences. I think she's a regular on Stephanie Miller's show. She's a regular with John Fugelsang. She was even on my show once. I only met her once at Annette Roots Nation a few years ago. But her name is Tina Dupuy, and she wrote a piece for The Atlantic, and I'm just going to read to you the paragraph that is pertinent to this discussion. She was talking about, it was during Obama's first inauguration, and she was in D.C., and she was invited to a bunch of parties. And here's what she wrote. And the headline was, "I believe Franken's accusers because he groped me too." And I thought, oh boy, okay, well, this one we're going to have to really pay attention to. She's a Democrat, after all. She's, you know, she purports to be a progressive. And she wrote, "D.C. was decked out and packed in for the inauguration of a young and popular new president. The town was buzzing with optimism, and one of the many events on our list was a swanky Media Matters party with Democratic notables everywhere. Then I saw Al Franken. I only bug celebrities for pictures when it'll make my foster mom happy. She loves Franken, so I asked to get a picture with him. We posed for the shot. He immediately put his hand on my waist, grabbing a handful of flesh." Let me repeat that line. "He immediately put his hand on my waist, grabbing a handful of flesh. I froze. Then he squeezed at least twice. I'd been married for 2 years at the time. I don't let my husband touch me like that in public because I believe it diminishes me as a professional woman. Al Franken's familiarity was inappropriate and unwanted. It was also quick. He knew exactly what he was doing." Okay, so she asks him for a picture. And when you go to take a picture with someone, chances are you touch. Usually, you put your an arm around the other person. Now, if the man is putting his arm around the woman, chances are it's going to go around her waist. And it may land on her waist. And what she's alleging is that he grabbed her waist, grabbing a handful of flesh. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, what is she saying? This is sexual abuse because he grabbed her waist. So this morning, imagine my surprise when there was Tina Dupuy on a New Day, and Allison Camerota asked her about what happened.
Let's talk about what happened with you. So in 2009, you were at an inaugural party for President Obama.
Yeah.
And you asked Al Franken to take a picture with you. Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
And he immediately put his hand on my waist, just grabbed a handful of flesh and squeezed a couple of times.
Your clothes?
Yes. But what I didn't put in the article was that, you know, I just quit smoking, so I just gained 20 pounds. I was uncomfortable just being in clothing, let alone having some lawmaker manhandle me.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know how many pictures with celebrities I've posed for where the hand goes around the waist. And he did not assault her. He did not abuse her. He did not do anything that she wasn't asking for by asking for a picture. If you're going to stand in close to someone, and I'm guessing, I'm looking at the picture now, it's very dark, it's hard to see, but she probably had her arm around, she had her arm around his shoulder. I don't know where she expected him to put his hand, but shame on her. Shame on Tina Dupuy for coming forth and acting as if she's the victim of some sexual assault because she took a picture with a celebrity, in this case, a guy who was just showing up to the U.S. Senate, and he touched her waist. He touched her waist. That's all. I'm not saying that Al Franken didn't do anything inappropriate in the past, but this last allegation is pure and utter bullshit. And I'm ashamed of Tina Dupuy for using that as a way to get her name in the media. All right, there. And I'm not trying to shame someone who's coming forth with allegations. I just think her allegations were totally bogus. All right, we're going to check in with the news in a few minutes. We're going to have Digby on today to weigh in on all of it. But first, how about what's news?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
In a Thursday speech from the Senate floor, Senator Al Franken of Minnesota announced he'd be resigning at the end of the year.
Serving in the United States Senate has been the great honor of my life. I know in my heart that nothing I have done as a senator, nothing has brought this honor on this institution. And I am confident that the Ethics Committee would agree. Nevertheless, today I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate. I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party. But this decision is not about me. It's about the people of Minnesota. And it's become clear that I can't both pursue the Ethics Committee process and at the same time remain an effective senator for them.
Franken's resignation came after seven women alleged that he touched them inappropriately, and 2 days after John Conyers became the first lawmaker facing harassment allegations to step down. It was a busy day Thursday as Republican Representative Trent Franks of Arizona announced he'd resign after House officials learned that he had asked two staffers to bear his child as a surrogate. And the House Ethics Committee announced it has established an investigative subcommittee to further probe allegations that Congressman Blake Farenthold of Texas sexually harassed a former aide, then retaliated against her after she filed a complaint. Farenthold already said he'd pay back $84,000 in taxpayer money used to settle with a former aide who'd accused him of sexual harassment in 2014. Without a spending bill, the government would have run out of money at 12:01 a.m. Saturday. So on Thursday evening, both the House and Senate passed a stopgap bill that would fund the government through December 22nd, setting up a showdown for right before Christmas. The new FBI director, Christopher Wray, was in the hot seat Thursday, testifying before the House Judiciary Committee. Asked by ranking member Gerald Nadler about the president's weekend tweets criticizing the FBI as being, quote, in tatters, Wray responded.
Congressman, there is no shortage of opinions out there. What I can tell you is that the FBI that I see is tens of thousands of agents and analysts and staff working their tails off to keep Americans safe from the next terrorist attack, gang violence, child predators, spies from Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. The FBI that I see is tens of thousands of brave men and women who are working as hard as they can to keep people that they will never know safe from harm. And the FBI that I see is reflected in folks like the new class of agents that I swore in at Quantico 2 days ago, hard-charging, high-integrity people, people like the hostage rescue team and SWAT teams that we send out into all sorts of danger with almost no notice. The FBI that I see is people, decent people, committed to the highest principles of integrity and professionalism and respect. The FBI that I see is respected and appreciated by our partners in federal, state, and local law enforcement, in the intelligence community, by our foreign counterparts, both law enforcement and national security, in something like 200 countries around the globe. That's the FBI that I see.
Former South Carolina police officer Michael Slager was sentenced to 20 years in prison on Thursday after being found to have committed second-degree murder for fatally shooting an unarmed black man after a traffic stop in 2015. He was fired from the force after the shooting and pleaded guilty in May to federal civil rights charges for shooting Walter Scott in the back 5 times as he ran away. State murder charges were dropped as part of the plea deal. Slager's attorneys argued that he shot the 50-year-old in self-defense after Scott reached for Slager's stun gun. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley has raised concerns about whether American athletes will attend the 2018 Winter Olympics, calling the matter an open question in an interview Wednesday night. At the White House press briefing on Thursday, Sarah Sanders said no official decision had yet been made.
Today, the U.N. Ambassador to the United States will participate in the Winter Olympics in South Korea. Is it an open question? Is that now in doubt?
Look, that wasn't exactly what the ambassador said. No official decision has been made on that, and we'll keep you guys posted as those decisions are made. Look, I know that the goal is to do so, but that'll be a decision made closer to time.
However, within an hour of that statement, Sanders tweeted an update. Quote, the U.S. looks forward to participating in the Winter Olympics in South Korea. The protection of Americans is our top priority, and we are engaged with the South Koreans and other partner nations to secure the venues. I got the news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right. And for a little bit more, hello?
This is Luke Vargas. We had a little mix-up there, but sorry about that.
Hey, Luke Vargas. Luke Vargas joins us from the Talk Media News Service. He's at TalkMediaNews.com, where he's the chief foreign correspondent. How are you doing today, Luke?
I'm doing very well. It's quite a busy day here at the United Nations, but we'll get to the world news in a second, because there's a lot on this whole finance front, both the tax bill and President Trump seeming to keep switching positions on this whole Wells Fargo fine situation. So if we could start domestically,
yes,
I'd love to get us underway.
Let's do it.
Well, we've been getting, you know, of course, Wells Fargo is being forced to pay tens of millions of dollars for these mortgage lending scams that they'd created up, and for, you know, creating all these fake bank accounts without the permission of their clients. And there had been a story I believe, coming out of Reuters yesterday, suggesting that the Trump administration was preparing to sort of write this off, to give Wells Fargo a pass here on these fines. And President Trump this morning in a tweet seemed to tap into his populist streak and say, no. In fact, we're going to go forward with fining Wells Fargo, and maybe we'll even fine them more, because wow, it's never acceptable when, you know, financial companies are caught doing something wrong. I think on one hand, you know, people seem to be pleased with the position the president has ping-ponged his way to this time. But the fact that it's sort of up in the air whether or not legitimate financial penalties are actually going to be assessed, and when there seems to be credibility to rumors that they could be written off, it doesn't exactly inspire confidence in the, you know, sort of regulatory instincts of this administration. And I think it goes without saying, you know, that to say you are going to always levy these fines and punish people when they're caught cheating, but then basically plot the destruction of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is one of the bodies that actually, or is the agency that initiated this these fines against Wells Fargo, it sort of raises the prospect of, okay, you say you want to catch people who are, or find people who are caught. Well, you're taking away the ability of the U.S. government in a large way to catch people in the future. And so I don't think it reads as a terribly sincere promise about going after improper banking behavior.
No, and I don't think most people believe anything he says. So, I mean, it's a curiosity that he would say such a thing, but we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop and when he reverses course.
Yeah, we'll see. I know this is going to be appealed. It's kind of a slow process. And again, you know, one wonders, we haven't seen a tremendous amount of follow through on a lot of the president's promises to sort of rein in corporate excesses. So it's one thing that he says this in a tweet today, but these sorts of fines and the appeals processes drag on much longer than we've seen a demonstrated, you know, sort of patience on the part of the president to see these things through. So it's possible he might have said this, but that actually doesn't mean the fines will actually be assessed. So, Wells Fargo back on the hot seat, but again, maybe they'll be able to dodge this as time passes.
We'll see.
The other financial story I think is pretty interesting today is we're hearing from both Apple Computers and Home Depot about what they plan to do with these giant piles of cash that they either are in possession of right now or are going to be getting as sort of a windfall from the proposed Republican tax cut. And these corporate plans directly contradict what the White House line is about how these tax cuts are going to help out the little guy in the American economy. We heard from Apple, a new report from the Financial Times, that they are going to be the biggest company, or the company with the biggest profit from this tax cut. They're going to get $46 billion in cash as soon as this thing passes, which is the equivalent, as the Financial Times points out, to funding the CHIP, Children's Health Insurance Program, for 4 years, which is, you know, a program that Republicans are currently saying they can't find the money to fund. So the amount of money coming back to Apple alone could do that for 4 years. Tim
Amazing.
Cook has said repeatedly they are not going to boost investment spending or hire more workers with this money. In fact, he says Apple's preferred strategy is whenever they're going to invest more in infrastructure or hiring, they borrow the money. So this notion that what's holding them back is accumulation of cash that a tax cut could address and a repatriation of money from abroad would address doesn't seem to be sincere. And the other company is Home Depot. Their CEO is one of the president's staunchest financial backers. They have just announced this week that $15 billion in cash that they're holding on to is going to be plowed into stock buybacks, which are targeted to really boost their senior management. So again, we're seeing share buybacks. We are seeing the, you know, start of new dividends or the increase in the value of dividends, companies paying down their debt, but not a lot of new investment spending or new hiring. And again, the White House had said that was how it was going to work. You put this cash in these companies' hands, they're either going to increase investment, they're going to hire new people or raise their wages. We're not really seeing that. The only companies, the major ones that have announced such plans, are in the news for other reasons. AT&T and CVS say they will open, new physical, retail or commercial spots. and they will increase infrastructure investment. But I think it's worth pointing out AT&T has been assessed repeatedly to have done too little infrastructure investment through the years and be operating sort of a shoddy network. So them saying they're going to invest a little bit more in that is probably fair to say overdue. And then on CVS's part, I mean, part of the major Aetna merger, which is likely to drive down some healthcare spending in the short term, but probably lead to higher health insurance premiums for that company in the future as competition in the health insurance market goes away. So again, their rationale for announcing new spending and new hiring, there might be ulterior motives there for why they're being so public about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. All this shows is that elections have real big consequences.
Indeed. Indeed. And again, I just find it, I am not a cash rich guy being in the journalism world, but since I was a little kid, I have saved up coins. And I know it sounds silly, but decades worth of coins, including in our increasingly sort of coin averse culture, I've got several thousand dollars in investments. Uh-huh. And I, am pretty active in the way I manage my investments. And I do, when it's 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock and I'm on my way home and I'm listening to earnings reports from these companies, they are always telling investors that they are flush with cash, that they're doing so, so well, and that if they wanted to do anything major, they could do it. And it just, again, contradicts what the White House has been saying in public in a quote from the White House Economic Council last week, saying there's a disappointingly low amount of capital accumulation right now in the American economy, which, again, mm-hmm. is just not what these people are telling me on their conference calls by extension. So two very different narratives there.
Most definitely. All right, let's look overseas. The UN held an emergency meeting today to discuss Trump's announcement of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. How'd that go?
I have been here for 5 years at the UN, and there has never been a UN Security Council meeting where 14 countries are standing against one, and it's the U.S. versus everyone else.
Yep.
And that's what we saw today. I mean, this was France, the UK, Sweden, some of our biggest allies calling for an emergency meeting to discuss Trump's actions. I mean, this is not like, hey, we want an emergency meeting because of violence from the Palestinians or anything. It's saying specifically Trump's announcement is cause for a diplomatic emergency. And so they've held that meeting 14 to 1. You'd see to see condemnation almost across the board of this policy. So far, no indications that any Western countries are taking up the president and Benjamin Netanyahu's offer, and that they've been hyping quite a bit to move their embassies as well. Netanyahu said about 36 hours ago, hey, we've been contacted by a lot of countries who are now thinking of following America's lead. That could happen. I actually think there is some evidence, that sort of all hands on deck diplomatic outreach by Israel and its tech sector to Africa and Latin America. It has brought a lot of countries on their side, getting them a few allies within the membership of the United Nations. But I'd say we are years and years away from seeing actual, major diplomatic power players and American allies like France or Great Britain to come along with America here. So we're quite on our own. And I guess the other thing I would say is the UK specifically is sort of threading an interesting line here, saying, we think this is unhelpful what President Trump is doing, but if the U.S. wants to go along with this, we're okay on one condition, which is that you guys come out right away with a detailed, credible peace process proposal. And they're sort of trying to get President Trump to put actions behind his words, because his argument is that this is actually a helpful thing to do,
right,
that you advance the peace process by accepting the reality on the ground. And that Israeli sovereignty, just like Palestinian needs to be recognized, and that putting it on paper that Jerusalem is the Israeli capital is somehow going to benefit the peace process. So the UK, I think, has voiced its skepticism about that, but they say, look, Trump, if you really believe this, we want to see you and Kushner and the American negotiating team put something on the table quickly. And again, given the signs that we've been seeing behind the scenes, that's coming together quite slowly, I have my doubts that the U.S. is going to be able to actually come up with such a plan in the short term.
Yeah, I doubt it. And already we keep hearing from the Palestinian Authority that the United States has effectively taken themselves out of the peacemaking business by this action.
Well, that's not what they say. Again, effectively, if this action, as the Palestinians and some Palestinian officials have suggested, has led to a severing of diplomatic ties between Palestine and America, it would be hard to see how we could be an effective, and we're not even getting to like trustworthy peace broker. But if you can only talk to one side, you obviously can't do very much. But the Nikki Haley was saying today, look, it's important the Palestinians in particular realize that we still care about this, that we're closer to a peace deal than ever before. We're taking this seriously. So again, they're trying to build up confidence that the peace process hasn't been crushed by this announcement. But again, I think the rubber's going to meet the road pretty soon, and you've got to put something on paper quickly. I mean, Kushner has been at this for 10 months now. We were told that in early November they started to actually map out a peace process. But again, I think Trump's decision has increased the urgency on Kushner to put something on the table quickly. And again, I think given that guy's sort of past professional behavior, I don't know if we have a lot of reasons to indicate that he's going to be terribly good at threading the needle here.
I'd say that's an understatement.
Yeah.
All right.
It's easy to overstate things, so I'm trying my best to understate.
I hear you. Luke Vargas, chief foreign correspondent for the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. Thank you so much, Luke.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay, take care. Have a great weekend.
At Leonardo. Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B, Digby.
It is always my pleasure and honor to have Digby join us on the show. Digby, of course, you can find her column at salon.com and Digby's blog at digbysblog.blogspot.com. Hello, Digby.
Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? How are you doing out there with the fires?
Well, the air quality is terrible here where I'm in Santa Monica, so I'm not in imminent danger of the fire itself, but everything is just awful around here. And what I'm seeing, you know, they're covering it nonstop on TV here, as you can imagine.
I'll bet.
And, you know, we're just burning up down here in Southern California right now, and poor Ventura, and now it's creeping up towards Santa Barbara, so, it's ugly.
And down to San Diego as well. It's going in all directions, just it's
terrifying. So all of Southern California is on extreme fire alert, and that's never happened before. This is the first time, and all the fire people on TV are just going, I know people always say that this is the worst, but we're serious. This is the worst. Because you lived here, Nicole. You know
yes.
how it is. You get these Santa Ana winds here in the L.A. Basin. And you know, what it is it's winds coming off the desert. And they're very strong, very gusty. And, normally we get the winds coming the other way off the ocean, right? But
mm-hmm.
this goes the other direction. And because we had a lot of rain last year and had a big, we broke the drought after many years of just being parched, a lot of things grew, and then they dried out again in the dry mm. season. So everything is just like tinder here. There was a lot of growth and then a lot of dry stuff. And the temperature is just, it's ridiculous. It's 80 degrees here in Santa Monica.
Wow.
It's
wow.
December. So anyway, I don't mean to waste all our time talking about the weather,
okay.
but can I just point one thing out?
Yes.
And that is that, I've been writing about this. In the new tax bill that they just passed, the Republican miscreants just passed, they specifically excluded deductions for wildfires and earthquakes. They ended those deductions. And, I can't help but take it personally as a Californian. When they start going after just specifically wildfires and earthquakes, they
right.
ended those deductions. I have to take that personally and assume they meant that for those of us who live out west. And, of course, that will include some red states, too, because they have wildfires in places like, Montana and
mm-hmm.
Idaho and other places like that. But they did that. I mean, there's just no end to it. There's no end to the fact that they will just spit in our eye. No matter what, we didn't vote for Trump, and, we're a Democratic state, so we're basically going to get screwed. That's just the way it works, and it's just really depressing.
It really is.
I'm sitting here breathing this horrible air right now.
Oh, I'm so sorry about that. And you have Democratic congressmen who actually voted in favor of this.
Well, and certainly everyone, there were seven of the 14 Democratic or Republican California congressmen
right.
who voted for it. And there's just, it's unthinkable that they get to keep their jobs after this. It's unthinkable. And I am desperately hoping that California is the place that we maybe will become the first all Democratic congressional delegation and get rid of every last one of the Republicans. And by the way, that would include people like Dana Rohrabacher, who is basically a Russian agent mm-hmm. at this point, Kevin McCarthy, the majority whip in the House, Daryl Issa, mm-hmm. you know, the crookedest politician in California, Devin Nunes, who's running the intelligence, all those people are from California. And, you know, they need to be gone next November. They really, anybody who wants to help do something seriously good for the Democratic Party and stick it to the Republicans, vote for their opponent, or, you know, help donate or vote for or work for or do whatever you can to unseat those people. It would send a powerful message, I think.
It really
anyway.
Would. Well, I'm glad you're okay, and hopefully the fires will peter out soon. It just is just devastating. Something else that's devastating. I don't know. I haven't seen you write a whole bunch about what happened yesterday with Al Franken. I know, you know, Howie Klein is on with me on Thursdays, and he was pretty livid yesterday, as was I. I'm still kind of angry because I think Franken was thrown under the bus. I think Democrats tried to do the right thing here, but I think they wound up being taken advantage of. Where do you come down in the world of Al Franken?
I've written a couple of things about it. You know, this isn't a story that I was following in great depth because I'm, you know, focused on Hitler. But the Al Franken thing, I think, you know, from the day it happened, I kind of knew that he was going to go. I knew he couldn't survive, and I said that. I said, this is probably a death blow. I am not, you know, I'm kind of leery across the board about a lot of this, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. I think that, you know, I'm a big believer in due process. I'm a big believer in having, you know, ways of adjudicating these kinds of situations. And I recognize that this is and I worked in Hollywood for, you know, decades, so I know how bad it is with sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm absolutely sure that, you know, 99% of this stuff is true. But nonetheless, what ends up happening is things like what happened with Al Franken, who, you know, obviously he has kind of a juvenile, you know, sexuality about him. That picture, which is what killed him, by the way.
Yes, I agree.
That picture, you know, it shows a grown man doing something that really only a seventh grade boy mm-hmm. should do.
You're right.
And it was silly and stupid. And, you know, I personally don't think it was scarring to the woman on the other end of that, but, you know, that's just me. Nonetheless, I knew that it would happen, and I knew that it would happen because Democrats continue to believe that if they, you know, if when they go low, we go high, and that somehow or another that's going to pan out for them. And, you know, frankly, it just doesn't. Now, if everybody feels good about themselves, that they did the right thing and they got rid of, you know, a harasser and they're taking the high road and, you know, then nobody can claim that they're hypocrites or whatever the reasoning is for doing this, you know, it's not going to work out that way, not politically. It won't. I mean, that is just not how this works anymore. There is no such thing as hypocrisy. No one cares. You know, the Democrats will all pat themselves back on the back for their virtue, and the Republicans will win. And in the end, women will suffer a great deal more in the long run because Democrats have not figured out how to deal with this. And this has been going on for a long time. It's not just in this situation. It happens all the time. Remember, you know, Acorn. Perfect
yep.
example.
Yep.
Shirley Sherrod, another example. General Petraeus, another example. Going all the way back to the impeachment when everybody was, you know, running around on the floor of the House, you know, or floor of the Senate, like Joe Lieberman, and, you know, censuring the president, and then Al Gore picking Joe Lieberman for his running mate. I mean, this happens over and over and over again, where let's talk about how virtuous we are, and then everyone will admire us and they'll vote for us, and then we'll do good things for the people. And, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of results there so far over the past couple of decades, you know. So in any case, you know, I'm torn about it. You know, I mean, I don't think any politician is sacrilegious. I think that, you know, if the party will be fine without Al Franken. Mm-hmm. I'm not particularly concerned about him personally. But nonetheless, you know, I just think it's another case of Democrats being suckers for the most part. You know, in politics, I think they ought to be a little bit more sophisticated about this. Business, you know, that's a different situation. If you've got a Harvey Weinstein or you've got a show with somebody who's been accused, you make a business decision. And that happens all the time for all kinds of reasons, right? That's at-will employment. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's accused of assaulting someone, that's a legal issue. As far as I'm concerned, the cops ought to be involved. If
that's
somebody,
right.
You know, if someone like the president, for instance, was, you know, grabbed a woman by the genitalia,
uh-huh.
I think that's a legal issue that should be dealt with by police officers. But, you know, as far as the sexual harassment in the workplace, you know, that is a different situation. In politics, it's the game that's being played. It's very, you know, let's just say the right's a little bit more sophisticated about this than the left is, I think.
They know how to play the game better.
Yep.
Although I
but
just...
They use our virtue against us. You know, mm-hmm. they're basically, it's like Sarah Huckabee Sanders said the other day, well, Roy Moore and Donald Trump haven't admitted it.
Right.
That's a lie anyway. Trump did admit it.
Yes,
but,
he did.
You know, that is just, you know, if you're a Republican and you deny it, that means you're innocent. That's
yes.
ridiculous.
Right. And meanwhile, yeah, then Al Franken, during his speech yesterday, said, I think he tried to take the high road and apologize, even though he didn't necessarily agree with the stories that were told were exactly as they went. He thought he'd be able to work his way around it by not, you know, dissing the women, by not saying that didn't happen, but by apologizing and saying I've done things that I'm not proud of. And now he winds up resigning while, you know, Roy Moore will likely be elected to the Senate on Tuesday.
Exactly. And not to mention the fact that, you know, before the Democrats, you know, finally, you know, came together and decided that Al Franken had to go, everybody on TV was saying, where are the Democrats? Why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they pushing? And then the minute that they did it, they start saying, oh, those Democrats, they just shoved, you know, they shoved Franken under the bus.
That's
I couldn't
right.
figure out what their position was on this because they'd been complete, you know, they'd been demanding something and then they didn't get it. And furthermore, the fact that Franken said, you know, he said some of this didn't happen and some of it I don't remember that way.
Right.
And, you know, of course, the picture, like I said, that's what did him in. The rest of it, you know, hey, he has a perfect right to defend himself if he wants to. He was out there accepting his fate because he'd lost the confidence of the party and they'd decided that he had to go for, you know, whatever reasons. And he accepted it and agreed to resign. He didn't make them expel him.
That's right.
But people wanted him to admit and grovel and wear a hair shirt and say, you know, I'm so sorry, you know, that this happened. And in other words, they wanted a false confession. I mean, this starts getting into weird stuff like, you know, the Inquisition or, you know,
right,
where
but,
admit that you are a heretic, you know, and it's
yes.
like, no, you know, and we'll stop torturing you.
Right,
and,
right.
you know, this is that's not, you know, that gets into some really there's some ugly historical parallels with that. And I really, you know, Franken had a right to do what to say what he said. And if the party lost confidence in him and persuaded him that he was going to have to go, okay, that's politics. You know, I may not agree with it, but I understand the process. But this idea that he had to crawl around and, you know, and so I even read somewhere on Twitter, somebody's going, he should go to each of those women and apologize and offer them money.
God.
And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. You know, good
and,
Lord.
And meanwhile, Trump is sitting in the White House
yeah.
with his approval ratings keeping on dropping. Meanwhile, he posted something today. I guess there was some poll that had his approval rating at around 45%, and he tweeted that out as if it was some great accomplishment. Meanwhile, that was an outlier. You have something up at Digby's Hullabaloo showing him at 32%, and as you say, falling fast. I mean, the lowest of any president ever since they've started polling. And he just ignores it and talks about it as if it hasn't happened. This is not happening, as if he's the most popular president ever. He lives in his own reality, and people let him get away with it.
Well, they do. I mean, this is really one of the most astonishing spectacles political spectacles we've ever seen. I mean, you know, here we have someone, and I should amend, you know, when I wrote that it's the lowest ever, it's the lowest sustained in the first year for any president. Other presidents have dipped lower, but this guy is just, he has been, you know, below, I don't think he's ever been above like 42% since the first couple of weeks.
Right.
That's never happened before. And it's getting lower and lower. I mean, you know, 33% is really low. And that's the Pew poll, which is a really, a very, very reliable poll.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, Trump is living in his own world along with these his supporters, which, you know, I think I've talked to you about this before, too, that, you know, this is a cult. It's not really a political movement or even, you know, it's not really a party. It's a cult. And it's a scary cult that seems to be scaring all the Republican officials, too, even though he's at 32%. I mean, he should not have this kind of across-the-board support from his own party, from his own, you know, officials in his party at that percentage. I mean, mm-hmm. that just doesn't even make any sense. But look what happened in Alabama. I mean, he agreed originally with Mitch McConnell to support Roy Moore's opponent
Luther
in the primary,
Strange,
Luther
right.
Strange, who was he's already there and sort of had this, you know, sort of supposed power of incumbency. He'd been appointed to replace Jeff Sessions. And so, you know, he agreed to do it. And then he went down to Alabama and you could tell he wasn't really comfortable with Strange, that he really wanted to be with Moore because Steve Bannon was with Moore.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it and then he lost. And so that's the lesson that he learned from that. Don't listen to those people. They don't know what they're talking about. I'm the one, you know, my instincts and my people know better. And weirdly, you know, you saw after that the Republican establishment do exactly what they did during the primary, which is that, you know, the Access Hollywood tape came out and they all went, oh my God, we can't have this, you know, this, I'm withdrawing my endorsement. I want my money back, blah, blah, blah. And they all said, this is the end. This is, you know, and various other times too. That's an outright racist statement, I think, that Paul Ryan once said about Donald Trump. I think it was the Judge Curiel statement.
Yes.
In any case, you know, over and over again, they've come out and said this, and then, you know, they withdraw it, and they're doing it again with Roy Moore. Well, you know, Mitch McConnell, who had said, this will not stand. We will expel him from the Senate if he comes in immediately. Now he's saying, well, maybe we'll have an ethics investigation, you know, which is obviously going to go nowhere. They'll be welcoming him in there. You know, this extremist, weirdo, you know, underage girl molester, Roy Moore. I mean, and this guy is way out there. It's not just the molestation thing. I mean, that should be the deal breaker, right? But there's a whole bunch of deal breakers
right.
for this guy.
Yeah, and Keith Ellison shouldn't be allowed to serve in Congress because he's a Muslim.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he said just during this campaign, he said to an African-American who said, you know, when do you think it was, or there was one African-American at his rally or at his gathering of whatever, said, you know, when do you think America was greater? He goes, well, I think back, you know, we may have had slavery, but at least families were together
right.
then. I think the world, you know, America was a better place. I mean, he's basically saying, well, first of all, families weren't together during slavery.
No, they weren't.
You know, that was one of the big problems with it. But more than that, you know, he's saying this in September of 2017, and he's about probably going to go to the U.S. Senate. We don't know for sure, but it's Alabama. Will any of us be truly shocked if he makes it? And here you have the Republican establishment having shown their cowardice. I mean, this is the thing that gets me. They come out and say it. You know, they say, no, no, we're going to defy Donald Trump. We're going to defy, you know, this rump movement in our party. We're not going to put up with it. And then they, you know, they shrink back and say, well, okay, maybe we will. Because apparently they're afraid of these people. And they're afraid of Donald Trump. And they are basically going along with it. So, you know, this is a very, very bizarre phenomenon. And Trump is, you know, I mean, and you and I've been watching the right-wing media for so long, we know exactly how this is going, right? I mean, not only has the Republican Party gone more extremist, even Fox News is more extremist than it used to be. And I know that's hard to believe.
Well, now,
they were all, ready out there.
Yes, and now they're pushing, they're going after Mueller. And this is my next question to you, Digby, is are they going to succeed? In it seems like they're running a concerted campaign to get Trump to fire Mueller. Are they going to succeed in that?
You know, I don't know if they'll succeed or not. I mean, that's an open question, but it's clear what they're trying to do. And it's I think what's shocking about it isn't so much that it's right-wing media. I think you and I both would have expected talk radio to do this and, you know, various others. And to be honest, I'm not surprised that they're going after the special counsel because that's, you know, that happens in these scandals. It happened to Judge Lawrence Walsh, you know, Nixon fired Archibald Cox, the Democrats went after Ken Starr. You know, that is part of it. I'm sure Mueller knew that going in, that there would be a moment when the Republicans would turn on him. That is part of the game of this, or I shouldn't even call it a game, I guess. It's just the way that these things work. It's the structure of these special counsel scandal investigation things. But what is different about this is that, you know, you have the party of the president in power, and they are also have this news media, this organization, particularly Fox News and Breitbart too, who are the only news media that the president pays any attention to. He's literally not aware of most of the stuff that is being revealed in the mainstream media. And he believes all this stuff. And it is, I'm telling you, any of you who are listening here, who, I know it's really awful to listen, go to Fox News. I hate it too. But I would just recommend to anybody, any progressive, to go and listen to 5 minutes of Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham right now. Because you will be shocked if you haven't done it recently. Because this is truly bizarro world. The news that they are, you know, informing people of is the complete opposite of what we all know to be true.
Right.
And I'm not going to say, we are not in the same bubble. It's absolutely not true. You know, I realize the mainstream news media has its flaws, but it's not like this. This is pure propaganda now.
This is the original fake news. I mean, that's the absurdity of the whole thing, is there is actually fake news, and Fox has been doing it all along. It's only gotten worse exponentially. And now we also have Sinclair coming up, which is going to take Fox. It's going to be like Fox on steroids.
Absolutely. And you know, and by the way, I mean, this is what's important about this, I think, that there's this feedback loop between Fox and the president. I mean, Fox isn't just informing the president of what's happening. It's trying to persuade the president to do things. And it works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as firing Mueller, I mean, he's done a whole bunch of things. You know, he follows up on all kinds of things that he sees on Fox and Friends or Hannity or Ingraham. We don't, you know, and this is a concerted effort, and it's being backed up by the GOP in the House going after Mueller. And they're, you know, putting, you know, they're creating all these stupid Hillary email investigations. They're doing all this stuff to try and throw up a big smokescreen, but also basically to sort of create this atmosphere within the right and for the president that he needs to do this. He needs to fire Mueller because Mueller is corrupt and he's destroying the FBI and he's destroying the law enforcement capability of America, you know, and that Trump needs to do this because he's president and he needs to save us from these people. That's what Newt Gingrich said just the other night. So, you know, there's a concerted effort coming from the outside out there to penetrate the White House and get directly to the president and tell him he needs to fire Robert Mueller. And, of course, Trump already wants to fire Mueller.
Sure.
You know, it's not like that's a tough one to persuade him to do. But so far, his lawyers and I assume his closest advisors in politics and in the White House and presumably maybe even his family have told him, no, that, you know, don't do it. That's not a smart, you'll just blow everything up. You know, just let this thing play out, at least for, you know, for now.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you fire him, well, it'll be a constitutional crisis, obviously, and I don't even know where that goes. But If he does it, everything's going to blow up. And you know, intelligent people understand that. But that's what the Fox News people and Bannon and, you know, this whole cult that's grown up around Trump and Trumpism, they want to blow everything up. So, you know, this is fine with them. You know, I'm a little less sanguine about blowing everything up. I mean, it just, you know, that just never seems like a totally good idea to me.
No, but it seems like he's doing it regardless. Right. I mean, no matter what he does, he's blowing things up, from his decision in Israel to, I mean, you name it, everything to even something like, you know, calling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas when he's honoring the Navajo code talkers. I mean, everything he does is it seems is in working towards blowing things up, like taking the norm and upending it because it's not in his honor or something. It's not serving him the way he wants to be served. The whole atmosphere with Trump in D.C. is to the level of absurdity. And it would be, you know, if somebody wrote a movie with some of the stuff he's done, you'd say it's implausible. This could never happen. The movie would never get made because it would be too unbelievable. Yet here's this guy doing all this stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that is really true. I mean, we say stuff like that all the time. But in this case, it really is true that this goes beyond the level of, you know, even satire to think about, you know, a president doing. And we're all watching this like it's a spectacle, right? I mean, we're all sitting there watching this thing unfold. But you can sort of sense that you know, the whole world has shifted in the last year. Things aren't the same as they used to be. I mean, even the sexual harassment stuff that's happening. And, I mean, I think that sort of sprang up out of the election as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, all of that, it just, everything feels really vivid and extreme. You know, it's not, things are just sort of happening in this wild, surreal way, you know, that is, you know, I mean, maybe it will calm down. I don't know that I have to say, I don't think I've ever experienced anything like this. I mean, I'm old, so I've been through a lot of political scandals. I mean, I remember Watergate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a teenager, but I remember it. And there was a surreality about it, and of course in the 60s there was violence and assassinations and all kinds of awful stuff like that. But there's something really, you know, maybe it's the reality TV aspect of this.
Maybe
it's just the modern world and the way social media works, but there is something really strange happening. That this challenge to the actual definition of reality is something I've never seen before.
No.
That we are operating on different levels of what we're actually seeing and that we are experiencing as reality. I mean, that is very bizarre, and it's so disorienting that I think it's the reason why Trump is getting over, despite the fact that the vast majority of Americans see him for what he is. I mean, it's not like he's fooling that many people.
No,
but,
and if his approval rating's at 32%, obviously a lot of people are seeing through him. But the question is, are enough? And I think the disconcerting thing, the thing that has my stomach in knots all the time, is you never know what he's going to do next. Is he going to insult Kim Jong-un to the point where he launches a nuclear attack on us? It's not inconceivable. Nothing catastrophic is inconceivable in Trump's world. And we're stuck in it. And it seems like the Democrats keep, you know, twisting in the wind and doing, you know, doing what they think is the right thing to do. But it always backfires on them.
Yep. Yeah, they're playing on a different playing field. They're actually playing a different sport. You know,
yeah,
it's like
they're
not even, you know, they're doing ballet and these people are playing, you know, football. I mean, it's a very different kind of approach to politics. And I mean, everything's up in the air. I don't know what will happen. I don't know how this will work out in the long run. But I do think that no matter what happens, even if Trump is, you know, even if the Democrats manage to do a sweep next November, I pray they do, and they get him out in 2020 or before if there's, you know, an impeachable offense there. Even if that happens, the changes that have been wrought to our system and the way that, that we look at our world, I think that they are going to be very long-lasting. It'll be interesting to look back 10 years from now and see exactly what kind of shifts, major tectonic global shifts were made during this period. Because I think that that is happening. I just can't tell you exactly what they are.
Digby, we are just out of time. Time always flies so fast when I talk with you. I always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Nicole. I really appreciate it.
You take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
Find Digby at digbysblog.blogspot.com, on the Twitters at Digby56, and here occasionally. With that, we're done for the week. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you back here on Tuesday.
And God bless the United States.